You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Welcome once again to Meltdown Comics and the Nerd Melt Theater. Guess what, everybody? Harmontown is now in session. Let's welcome to the stage the mayor of Harmontown, Dan Harmon!
Thank you. What a lovely... lovely group of people you seem to be on first impression, at least. I got my notes. I got some notes. Well, of course, we lost a legend today. Philip Seymour Hoffman died. Yeah, let's start with that. You should always go with a high energy opener.
Were you connected to that when you heard the news? Did that
it did, and that's a testament to the fact that how much respect I think that Kai really is worthy of. It's like famous people die, and it's like we only have a relationship to their fame, and go like, well, he was famous. Hey, the guy that played Klinger on MASH died today, and you're like, aw. You automatically go, aw, because death is bad.
Jimmy Farr died too?
No. I didn't mean to upset you, no. Okay. But I'm saying I was picking like a random person and it's like, well, I mean, the only at this point he's just a famous name. He's just a name you know. And then there's people that pass that you go, oh shit, holy fuck, that's terrible that they're gone. And yes, I have equated that against the fact that millions of us die every day. Philip Seymour Hoffman was worth a couple hundred thousand normal people at least. He was a good fucking actor. I'm bummed he's dead, even though we all die every day.
I watched a bunch of the coverage of it, and I was, you know, I was bummed out. Not that I was ever like very close to him. And I couldn't separate the idea that are they covering this so much because he won an Oscar, because he's great, because he's a good theater actor, or what? But I was surprised the level of coverage that got.
Well, I think truly, I mean, this is here's my answer to that. He won an Oscar because he's great. There's coverage because he won an Oscar. He won an Oscar because he's great. He was a theater actor. He was a good fucking actor. He was really, really good. I watched Capote today. I don't know. We picked a PSH movie to watch to mourn him. We rolled into Boogie Nights, but I had to come here. But every movie he's in, he makes better. He's never been bad. He's just a good actor. He's one of those rare actors who doesn't just inhabit characters and like, that's amazing. He really seems Russian. That's a type of good acting. There's another type of good acting that's like, wow, Woody Allen's really good at being himself, even though he's just a writer on screen, like talking about his feelings. That's another type of good acting.
But
Philip Seymour Hoffman put himself into people who were nothing like him. And Capote was one of those amazing, amazing examples. You really don't know what you're watching. If you see footage of Truman Capote and then you see footage of Philip Seymour Hoffman and then you watch that movie, you really are watching like a miracle happen. In my opinion, it's like he's not doing a Rich Little impression of Truman Capote, but he's certainly like talking funny the way Truman Capote did, which I have no idea how you could possibly do that and still emote. And there are scenes in that movie, and that movie is riveting. And so, even if there was a bad actor in that role, I think that would be one of my favorite stories. But the camera pushes on him, and it's just fucking only thing that's for sale is him just bursting into tears, and it is as amazing as watching a fireworks display.
Now he died. We can I think assume from the reports that we have already that it was a heroin overdose. Was like that wasn't big news. Like Justin Bieber egged some houses. That's giant news.
Right.
This guy was a heroin addict and has kids and is cool.
No, it wasn't. Well, he was struggling with it. It was like Robert Downey Jr. You know, it was like we were in his corner. He was struggling with it for a long time. And that's the crazy thing about our point of view on drugs in this society. I find it very strange. He was Hoffman was straight for 11 years or something. He battled and battled and battled with it. And we all have to accept at this point. And I'm not asking the truck drivers listening to feel sorry, to shed a tear for the famous actors of the world. But we have to accept at this point with Heath Ledger and Robert Downey Jr. And we have to accept that if you're really good, if you're really capable of genuine charisma on camera, and not a lot of us can fill that job, that there's some overlap between that and there's a challenge with the stuff, and we go back and forth between treating it as a challenge and as an indulgence. And I do want to give a special wag of the dick to Val Kilmer for his terrible. Like, I was looking at all the celebrity tweets, you know.
Is that our new segment, Dan Harmon's Wag of the Dick?
At Val Kilmer. Because I'm on his...
Every week you're going to wag your dick at Val Kilmer.
I'm on his case now. Week after week, I'm gonna call out Val Kilmer on something. I'm going to watch him now. Because I was surprised at the amount of class and restraint and genuine, sincere, emotional mourning going on Twitter by famous people who aren't exactly famous all the time for their tact, their grace. Sometimes if you're famous for being a really good actor, maybe you're a bit of a jackass on Twitter. Sometimes you can be famous for being a jackass on Twitter and do a show at Meltdown and pull in like 100 people. But I was amazed because I scanned down the list. They always do that aggregate story. Hollywood reacts on Twitter to Screen Legend's death. And I was like, where's the bad guy? Where is he? Val Kilmer. Does anybody have his tweet pulled up? He did a lot of Prince-like abbreviation. Like he would spell blue BLU. He didn't have time to blue day for the thing. It was that the idea that a good guy had died was about 10% of his 140 characters, and then the rest of it was crammed in with abbreviations about how drugs are a bad thing. Sometimes people feel like they need to escape through them, but you don't need to do that, man. You gotta keep your strength up. You know, it's like, wow, a little that's a good time to pontificate about your view on things in the middle of a eulogy.
Pull up a Val Kilmer tweet right now.
Somebody is okay. Thank you.
Tyler in the front row has one for us.
This is Val Kilmer's tweet. This is my new segment called Tisk Tisk Val Kilmer.
Should we get theme music for that?
Blue day spelled like Blu-ray. You did something naughty. I'm watching you. You've acted rather haughty. Why you carry yourself that way? Online. Thank you. Blue day spelled like Blu-ray. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. That's autocorrect, right? He's using a Sony phone, and you want a Blu-ray? The phone says, "No, it's a blue day." Samsung, wait, Sony, or 2000.
So it's sick Blu-ray. It says
no, Blu-ray. No, no, no. I'm sorry. Val Kilmer starts his tweet, "Blue day."
Okay.
But he spells the word blue the way you spell blue in Blu-ray. B-L-U.
Okay. Or he's from Belle Biv DeVoe. Yes.
Jeff was on
the... tips and toes. She broke a needle and she can't sew.
I'm not going to shock anyone with this news. It's Super Bowl Sunday. Jeff came here directly from the drawing room. It's been a long day.
I'm drunk.
Yeah. You made a face like you were about to not. You were about to say I'm sober. Like you're. Yes.
Are you sober?
Probably not.
Okay, well, okay.
If I know me. But this is a rare day where I'm relative to you. I'm like, hey, whoa. Yeah. I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining.
Well, okay. You're about to.
No. I'm not complaining. I would never complain. That would be instant karma so fast. I'm going to be as drunk as you in the next 20 minutes.
I'm just tired.
All right. All right. This segment's gone way too long.
Read the tweet.
Okay. Let's start from the top, though. This segment's called Tisk Tisk, Val Kilmer. Guess who walking back on? Naughty, naughty. Worst Batman. You know it. Not his fault, just bad casting. That's weird casting. And that's George Clooney's been Batman, and even that was swallowable. Val Kilmer?
Michael Keaton? Hey. Michael Keaton.
Oh! That's an interesting little groundswell of... What was it about Michael Keaton's portrayal of Batman that's defensible? You know, his heart was in it. I don't know. He was the size of an actual bat, but you felt like he was like, yeah, fuck you, Michael Keaton as Batman, and like you I don't know. I felt like he's
the first guy to whisper, "I'm Batman," and you liked it because like he whispered it like it was good.
And he's arguably the best thing
but
about that.
That
movie.
was in a rare time when Michael Keaton had a license to print money. He was in everything. He was Mr. Mom. He was in Gung Ho. He was in every goddamn thing.
Yeah, well, let's travel back in time to that day. Like, not to the point where you don't have to give him as much credit as we have to give him. Like Bruce Willis in Die Hard. He was Michael Keaton was. He wasn't coming off of Mr. Mom. It was weird when they announced that Michael Keaton was going to be in a Batman suit. It was weird for everybody. But yeah. but all the Frank Miller like Die Hards kind of went. Whatever Tim Burton wants, like this is they're making a Batman
movie.
Was
that his first choice? Did someone say no before Michael Keaton? Somebody must have, right?
It was Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
For real? For real?
Yeah, a woman. This won't be one of our more popular segments, but it will be. It had the best mileage.
It's becoming my favorite already.
This guy's iPhone went to sleep already. Now you gotta. Tyler's gonna put his biometrics back into it to start it up. Thank you. All right, so here we go. Blue Day, Philip Seymour Hoffman ODD'd. Not died, ODD.
OD apostrophe D?
That's correct.
All right.
Addiction comes from. That's an abbreviation of from. Addiction comes from trying to escape the pain of living. We all struggle with this, but drugs, capital D on drugs, never help. So that's a good 5% spent on the eternal soul of the man you supposedly respect. And, you know, 95% what you've got to say about some fucking bullshit. And I just find that within the span of the same tweet, Val Kilmer, I'm just telling you, there's no rule book for it, but let me start to write it. You're chapter one. That's tacky. All right. So here we go. Oh, thank you for your... That was Val Kilmer. And hey, you can redeem yourself, Mr. Kilmer.
By coming on our show.
You can come down through the skylight if you like. And fight me with your sharp little wing weapons.
What's your beef with his Batman?
No. I don't really have one. Honestly, I swear. But he gave it his all too. He was a handsome man at that time. I don't know. That movie was just a bad experience for anyone to have if you were alive back then. And it was just a bad thing to happen.
I'm pretty sure everybody here was.
And it was just, you know.
Nobody here is 12.
All right, so let's move on. We got over that tragedy. But, yeah, I don't know. Guy was a good actor. Well-deserving of public mourning and our respect. And I'm telling you, I mean, that guy is going to now, because we take these people for granted, national treasures, I would call them. Go back and watch every movie that has Philip Seymour Hoffman in it. And now even, it's not like we didn't recognize the fact that he was a good actor, but holy shit, he's going to be like a legend. And it's a shame because he would have been so fucking good for the next 30 years. It's terrible. He was 46 years old. Terrible.
Steve Martin tweeted today that he saw him do Willie Loman. and said that it was the best Willy Loman that he'd ever seen. Like he was that good. Like he was a hell of a theater actor.
I can't even begin to imagine. Yeah, seeing him live on stage.
You know what I can't begin to imagine, Dan? Is a sports corner. Today is Super Bowl Sunday.
Right, okay.
Dan, I know that you saw the big game because you're a big lover of games, big and small.
Yeah. No, I need to keep up on all the sports with my seven plasma screens and my sports bar.
Sports corner!
Sports corner! Get up! Your sports! Throw up your hands! Sports worse. Gotta get the ball outside. Gotta put it in the bounds wide. Sports corner. Gotta do your scene. Gotta talk about sports. Know what I mean? I got injuries. Got athletic yardage. Got all kinds of things. It's a sports corner.
Dan. Super Bowl just ended. Probably like
what a game.
What a game. Who did you have favored going into the game before we talk about the result?
Well, I think that all of us were rooting. We thought, whether we were rooting for them or not, we thought this was a distinct situation of the home team having an advantage.
Well, but they played in a neutral field in New York.
Well, and who's more neutral than you know who?
I do have to tell you that it was the Seattle Seahawks versus the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, I don't even know. We'll have to edit that out. It's so redundant.
Exactly. But going in, were you a Seahawks guy or a Broncos guy? And tell me why.
I mean, we all thought as a betting man.
Yes.
As a sportsologist.
Just by the numbers.
Strictly by the numbers. Yes. As a blueprint sportsman over my toast and jam, gearing up for the day. No matter what I'm hearing.
And real quick, just tell me who the teams were again.
It was the Seahawks and the Broncos.
Okay. And where are they from?
They're from Seattle and Denver.
Okay, shit. I feel terrible for even asking.
Yeah, I mean, again, just edit it out. It doesn't matter.
No.
Everyone knows what I'm telling you. So, yeah, we all felt going in like because the robot part of us felt like it was going to be a Seahawk game, right?
Yeah, because...
Well, just because of the boring statistics, Jeff, the technical things, the things that don't have to do with the human heart. Yardage, for instance. Like, the Seahawks into this game with a superior yardage and just more completions. Just like, there's just more completions. It seems on paper like better football. If you're a robot. But if you look at it from a standpoint of injuries... And recoveries of those injuries, and March Madness, which is a factor that nobody ever because that's months off.
People
March Madness isn't going to matter. Of course, it matters.
People forget to put March Madness in to the Super Bowl equation.
So that's
okay.
And it's
so
what we saw today was a fucking clash of the fucking Titans. Pardon my French.
Were you surprised by the result?
I think we all were. Yeah.
Were you?
Of course I was, yeah.
In what way?
Well, I never thought I'd see so much steam coming off of the field. I was surprised, frankly, by the lack of leadership on the Broncos' part. That was a heartbreaker because this is a team that's renowned for its quarterbackery.
Right.
Everyone knows that the Seahawks, they're like a team of rogues, okay? They move as one unit. They advance the ball, okay?
You're actually kind of getting close to being accurate, which is amazing.
Yeah. The Broncos have always been, it's always been about one guy, their quarterback.
Who is?
Stop interrupting me.
Okay.
And that guy...
Peyton Manning, you're talking
about. I didn't see the same arm on Manning today.
What did you see the difference? Because I
felt like something was wrong at home. This is a guy who's usually very strategic. He sees a pocket and he delivers to it with no thought about the larger yardage.
Right.
This was a person who was about the amount of downs. Like, he knew that this is a game of downs.
Right.
The more downs you get, the more yardage you're gonna get. You're gonna get more downs.
You thought there were too many thought pockets?
He's just thinking too much about yardage. Like, I'm going to make a big yardage pass.
Right.
But instead of, like, who the old Mannings, Paytons.
Yeah.
Like, he was a guy who would just shoot, right into the little pockets right in front of him. Okay, that's a third down. Congratulations. Now you got more downs. You can trade those in for more points in the kickoff. That's how you win Super Bowls.
Sports Corner!
The Seahawks knew that. They learned that and they knew it. They saw the weakness and they took advantage of it. Right on the 50-yard line, you can see it.
Did you make a bet in the game? Did you have do you have any money on that game?
I put it all on the Hawks.
Yeah. What was the wager?
Did you
take the points or the money line?
A gentleman doesn't say. But I will say the spread was 2-3. Took a 2-3 spread. If you bet a lot on sports, you know it's about the spread.
Now, I mean, Dan, you're a big football guy. So now that the football season is officially over,
yeah, but now March Madness starts.
Now you're Mr. March Madness. Who do you like in the brackets? Who do you got?
I think I'm gonna keep an eye on every bracket. I think South Division is always we make the romantic notion it's gonna be about South Division, but look at Northwest. Look what they did.
Among the top 10 teams.
Look at the Eastern Seaboard.
Among the top 10 teams. Top 10 teams, who do you like?
But brackets, Jeff. Not about teams. It's about brackets of teams.
But teams are
South.
Teams exist within
East
brackets.
Western. North.
East Western.
Eastern Seaboard.
East Western.
East Western Division is, you laugh, but there's a, after the wild card rule was removed from the brackets,
right.
The now East Western is going to be like one of the big powerhouses coming out. You guys laughed about Fox becoming a major network, but East Western Division is going to fucking
right,
tear up the Astro.
While we're
turf.
On it, who do you like in the Oscars? Best Picture noms? Who do you like?
Best Picture. Well, you know, people follow their hearts. I'm gonna go Skippy's Problem.
Skippy's Problem.
Because you know, I mean, it's. I don't want to be crass. I'm gonna get in trouble for this tomorrow in the press. But he's an alien with AIDS. People are gonna go for that. That's gonna bring in all the Transformers people and all the AIDS people. And then, and when you see Harrelson's performance, you're gonna go like, oh god.
Why is Harrelson? And look, I love Harrelson as much as anybody. But why is he in every movie now? Like, how come
he's high. He loves getting high and making movies. What would you? He can do whatever he wants. What would you do?
Did you see 12 Years a Slave? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I love. No, I didn't. I didn't see it. I thought about the concept of riffing on that, the joke being that I had seen it, and then, I don't know. I saw low dividends.
But you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen anything. I saw Her. I saw Her.
I liked Her.
Her was amazing.
Her was good.
Oh, that's one for the ages. Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, I was not a big Joaquin Phoenix fan, but I liked that movie. I thought he was quite good in it.
I think he's great, and I think that what I love about Her is that, like Eternal Sunshine, it's these movies where you deconstruct love, where you actually get to the heart of it. Like it's like these movies where fucking like you know 19 pairs of shoes and 3 reasons to do it. They can be cute sometimes. Sometimes they can be good, but they're never.
What was the log line on 19 pairs of shoes and 3 reasons to do it?
Sometimes Mr. Right can be right here. those movies are sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad, but they are those movies, and those movies never have anything to do with actual love because they formalize love in an attempt to get their story done in a way that people, because they devalue the audience, they don't think that the audience understands what love is, and it's these movies where somebody that's very lonely and very creative like says, yeah, but fuck love the way it is in these movies, and kind of deconstructs it, that on the surface seems cynical, but those are the movies where you actually learn things about love while you're watching. I mean, I felt myself feeling things watching a movie about Joaquin Phoenix jerking off to his computer. It was profound, the things that they illustrated about the nature of relationships and the definition of true love. And also, yeah, it's nice. They removed the human body from the equation, which is an important thing to do if you're going to get to the bottom of real love. Because some of you people got no legs. I've read about you. Stand up! Hey, Jeff, can I tell you something I've always wanted to say up on this stage?
You love cock in your mouth?
Yeah. Real nice. I do not have that honor.
Of being able to say that, or
having a cock in my mouth.
Well,
I could if I want.
You could. It's certainly within your bailiwick to as mayor of Harmontown.
All right. all right. So. I guess just
cock in his mouth. So.
This segment is called.
Before you tell me, cue me for a musical theme.
It doesn't matter. I mean, I was all like, you can pick one. The segment is called seemingly unrelated paragraphs that I say into the microphone. In a confusing tense that make you think that I'm not here in the moment in this show.
I'm sorry, say that again. Sega, I think I had the theme for it.
I'm simultaneously trying to memorize the.
You just say play. You ready?
Okay. So the segment's called seemingly unrelated paragraphs that I've memorized and I'm going to recite as if I'm making them up. Well, Jeff, the thing about writing is, The thing about writing is it's a life spent throwing messages and bottles out into this darkness. And you can see online or through Nielsen numbers that people are watching. You can see in forums that people are respecting it. But what I'd like to do, on this tour, now that I have no job, is get out there and see if any of these people are real and look into their eyes and find out if I've been having any impact. Did you get that? That's a wrap on principal photography for the Harmontown documentary. We're liars. Sometimes we lie. You gotta finish your movie.
Dan, I
said that on January 2nd, Dan, 2012.
I'd like to try it one more time, but do it more honest. Go ahead.
What?
Say it, we didn't get it. Try it again.
Okay. More honest? It's all a lie.
More in the moment.
Oh, more in the moment.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
I mean, all right. How do we get you in the moment?
Well, ask me about this topic, but we have to change tenses. That's the confusing thing. We haven't gone on tour yet.
Do it in the Blue Perfect.
Is that Val Kilmer's Blue Perfect? PLU? Dash Perfect?
Just go with it. Go with it.
I wasn't asking for a suggestion like an improv show for tense.
All right. I was joking and saying doing it again. I thought you did it perfect the first time.
Okay. Well, I mean, the thing is, the reason we write is because we want to connect with people. So you sit and you put messages in bottles, you throw them into darkness at people that you don't know, and then you see that they like it, but you see that in the form of numbers or on the internet. And I just wanted, now that I'm between jobs, I thought we could go out there and go see if any of these people were real. Was there an impact there? That just seems fucking fake. That's not why I went out there.
Neil, now I want you to get behind Dan and film an audience while Dan says it again. But I want the audience to lie too, but pretend they haven't seen this before. Because if we're going to use this, and it's going to be in the documentary, at least they all get to go, oh, we were in that scene where it was fucking bullshit.
We wrote that together.
Yes, all right. But I want you guys to look either bummed out or blown away or whatever. But now, Dan, like you have to bring the thunder now.
All right. It's like you know, when you're a writer, the goal is to be racist. But I've never met a person that wasn't white. So I think the purpose of this tour is to get out there on a team of horses and just find and touch and possibly interrogate non-Caucasians. Wow, there's no end to the fallacy. I've got a name. Neil thinks I'm making fun of the process, but I'm not. If you try to make a documentary about me going on the road, I don't know why I'm going on the road. That was like a little chunk that we thought maybe we could use.
Did you get it, Neil?
Got it.
See you in Austin.
See you at Berkeley.
Yeah, see you at South by Southwest.
That's how you make documentaries? Wait, our documentary's already we're already in South by Southwest.
Yeah, yeah.
He's still shooting it?
We've been selected. That means that in the trailer there will be like laurel leaves around a thing that says selected.
On our little logo, there's laurel leaves, but doesn't ours already have laurel leaves around it? Those are other, not that one, but our Harmontown logo has laurels around it.
Double laurels.
We're resting on other laurels.
Hmm. Interesting. Anyways, yeah. I mean, he probably won't use that because you can see when I'm being insincere and I can't do it. But I said it on the couch in there.
Said what?
Said the thing about going on the road to touch people.
Say it again. say it again, but really well while the camera's not here. Cause
I'm going on the road to touch people. I'm going to get into a tour bus because I'm between jobs. And I just want to go out there, Jeff, and I want to see if there's faces behind the low Nielsens and the affectionate Tumblr blogs that I can touch, provided their age is above a certain limit. And make eye contact with and say, am I a good person even though I'm fired? It's a terrible reason to go on a tour, and I don't think it's accurate.
Was there ever a reason? Or do you know the reason for real?
No.
It was just for fun, right?
I think the reason I for the tour it's not usable. But the reason for the tour was
Neil, get out of here.
The reason for the tour was it had something to do with me, the performer, because I had just been fired as the writer. So I was just kind of going like, "Well, I don't know, I just wanted to dive into something that was different, you know. That's all. I don't know. I don't know what beyond that. The documentary does a pretty good job of revealing.
I feel like
what a gross, weird balloon animal of a person I am.
I feel like at a real simple level, the idea was that you'd left the comfort zone of this room and wondered if you could find this kind of comfort level in Phoenix, and Brooklyn, whatever. And strangely, we found it. Because the audience is not any different wherever you go.
Yep.
And did it make you happier at the end? Did it change you in any way?
Nope.
Not at all? It made you happy.
It made me happy. Donuts make me happy. I don't know if they're good for me or not. I don't know if I should deny myself them or devour them for breakfast. I it made me happy going on tour. I will always be an incomplete person. I hope so, because if you die a complete person, then that means you wasted some seconds of your life. It would be nice to bring it right into the station. Complete! Die. But other than that, your life should be spent kind of completing yourself. So I did not get completed by the tour. I didn't turn into somebody else. I didn't suddenly realize halfway through that I should be a vegetarian, or that I should quit drinking, or that I should value the sunset. I think I overcame my stage fright maybe by orders of 5 to 10% more. And I think I also realized that it's too late for me in terms of character arc. As a character, that's why guys my age aren't characters on TV. They're usually detectives or surgeons. They're supposed to have their shit figured out. And so that's why it was nice to like go on the road with Spencer, who still is young enough to be affected by old people. And I like, you know, it was nice getting to know him and hearing a little bit of him in me and putting a little bit of me into him, and coming back with him.
Can you elaborate on that?
and coming back with him, and I hired Spencer as my assistant, and I started that animated show with Spencer, and I'm not shoving Spencer into the system, but I'm putting him out there, and we ended up writing a character for him on Community, and everything continues to be unflappable to him. Does he deserve it? Will it make him a good person? Who cares? But he's a person too that's now kind of can be out there. I take pleasure in that, and it's like I don't get to change. Well, fucking old dude. Well,
but there was a moment when you got back on Community, when they rehired you, you came back here and you had your arms crossed and you sat down and you seemed very like poised and like vindicated. You did change in that moment. Like there was a vindication there, and like wouldn't that be a change?
Yeah, I'm yeah.
But then that's short lived, right? Like then all of a sudden you're back at the dirty work of
yeah. The same companies that will fire you because they don't give a shit about you will also rehire you because they don't give a shit about you. Like they you shouldn't take it as seriously as you do. I'm gonna keep doing it.
Could you answer honestly? I mean, could you even know the answer to this question? Would you rather there was another season of Community, or would you rather there not be one?
A sixth season?
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I can't answer that question because I have to actively. I think we've already talked about this. This is a very strange thing for me. I have to actively hope for a sixth season, otherwise, like, I wouldn't be able to go to work there.
But if you knew there was going to be a sixth season, would that instantly make you happy, or would that make you bummed out, or like worried?
Like, I mean, like, it wouldn't. It's more complex than that. It's like knowing that you have a baby on the way. Like, does that? I mean, there's different parts of you that would be like, "Fuck, am I ready for this? Shit, I could have used that trip to the Everglades." Come on, we've all been there. It's that fantasy of having a kid, but you also want to go on one of those fan boats.
But actually, like, but,
and what could be more mutually exclusive?
But knowing you for a long time, like,
so you say Gators is sex is determined by the temperature? That's right. Keep your baby's blanket out of the fan, please. You never see that. It's dangerous. Either procreate or explore America's swamplands. Do not try both.
But it's hard, like, knowing you for a long time, it's hard to say whether you're a happy version of you or a sad version. You always come off like you're incomplete, that there's a sadness to you. But I would say right now, knowing you, that you're probably as happy as you've been since I've known you.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah,
but you don't wear a smile. Like you're not a
no,
smile.
No.
You don't do bell kicks down the road.
My whole life is a smile.
he said frowningly.
The part you get to look at is the little center part of the smile. That's the little kissy part. Fucking corners of my life are up by God's ears. I'm part of God. I'm God's mouth. I am God's mouth, and I am smiling. But the part you get to see for 40 years is a wrinkly little snot gutter with gross mustache hair on it. You can never tell if it's smiling. It's yeah. But yeah, I like that metaphor. I'm going to refine it and blog about it. But no, yeah, definitely. Look, I've got a lot of stuff. Like, I'm always way happier if there's stuff out there that people are experiencing that can somehow I can convince myself reflects on my value as a person, while simultaneously knowing that it doesn't. But I'm way happier having something on the air than not having something on the air. If they were to say, hey, we need a sixth season of Community, I'm going to be just as happy as if they say Community's canceled. Exactly as happy, for totally different reasons. It's a completely I'm fulfilled. I get to do whatever I want. I'm a fucking giant baby. Just like a big pacifier in my mouth. And now I'm getting married to somebody that's heard me fart, and I got a dog, and I'm not tap dancing every day. I still got a lot of shit to do, but yeah, you're right. I'm happy.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet?
Well, then you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
But why are you applauding happiness? That's the one thing that doesn't need... Applaud world hunger. Oh, wait, don't do that. No, don't do that. Wait, that's bad. Okay, I know. I retract my question. That's why you're applauding it. You want to reward it because you want more happiness.
They're applauding happiness, but it's so funny because when you say you're happy, you make an excruciating face.
I was thinking about their applause. I was like, why do we applaud people saying they're happy?
But you frown before the applause. You were saying, happy.
I frown when I talk. I'm a thoughtful person.
But you don't frown all the time. You frown more when you... Like more tonight when you said that you're happy and content, that looks
because it's not a
natural.
A happy person's natural state is not talking about how happy they are or why they're happy. That's not a natural state. So it takes me out of the happy moment to count the reasons why I'm happy. That's something that dishonest people do. Oh, I love Todd so much. He did the most sweet thing the other day. He and I, we went rock climbing because that's how we met, and he pulled out a tiny rock, the same shape as, and just blah 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 blah. Press release about how complete you are as a couple. Fuck off. Like.
No.
I'm so amazed. I went to Griffith Park today, and I went jogging. I just fucking blew out my quads and my delts, and I feel fucking good. I feel so good. I'm really at a complete place in my life. I don't believe you. Like I'm frowning when I talk about whether I'm happy or not because who talks about that?
Well, that sounds like you don't like. Yeah, you're right about that, but I feel like it's a part of you is that you don't feel like you're allowed to be happy. Like you're getting away with something that you're.
I don't think I'm allowed to say it. I think that frowning and scowling and.
But if somebody asks you, "Are you happy?" you're allowed to say yes.
Secretly, it's privately, a little more privately than. I don't think it makes for a good speech. Like Hitler didn't say, "I'm happy."
He wasn't happy.
But he got so much done.
Oh, boy.
We may actually have to edit that out. That just came together wrong. I'm so used to using Hitler as a way to make a point. I accidentally used him to make a point about happiness. Because I don't normally talk about how to be happy. Usually grabbing the Hitler tool out of the toolbox works, but I was feeding a baby. I grabbed that Hitler. Oh, no, I'm feeding a baby with a Hitler.
But now you're smiling more talking about Hitler than you did about your own happiness. Look at the smile on your face. This guy loves Hitler. You hate yourself.
I'm smiling because it's fun to make mistakes. Their reaction is fun. We're laughing together. And then the odd thing is, you know, there's just so many things that we've talked about on this stage where everybody's been smiling and happy and feeling free and like nothing's wrong. And then there's the context issue. So then, like here's a recording, here's a transcript of Dan Harmon talking about his feelings about work. And it's like, it's all fun. Otherwise, I wouldn't say it up here. I'm trying to make people laugh. I'm trying to make people think. I'm trying to make people happy that they spent $10 on something. I'm not gonna, and then it's like, and I tend to go to the places where these people are like happy and everyone's smiling and interested or whatever. But then there's a global context now, and it's all so fucked up and stupid.
Yeah, but fuck that shit. Like, just like you're allowed to shoot from the hip still. Like, you're never going to stop doing that.
I'm always going to do that, but I don't want to talk about it that anymore. And I also don't want to talk about whether or not I'm happy. Like, it's some kind of press release.
I understand, but that's a silly thing. Like, Katharine Hepburn was like in some interview. I want to say it was Dick Cavett. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. And there was a leading question, kind of like, do you like Hollywood? Do you like Hollywood people? And she said, like, the best people I've ever known lived in Hollywood. Like, I love being an actress. I love, like, I know you want me to say that I like fuck Hollywood and they're phonies. It's like, the greatest people in the world live in this town. Like, I'm surrounded by creative people. And she can say that, but she knows when she says that you sound like, it's a very, it's an unidentifiable thing to say out loud as he just scatters the stage with ice. You're allowed to be happy. You're allowed to brag about it. But you're never going to boast about your happiness, but you're allowed to, you know, kind of smile and chuckle at your own well-being right now.
Well, I think that when you're... Well, I don't know about you. Well, I do know about you. You're weird. But I know that Dino and I, because I've talked to him about this, when we're really happy, we get in our car... And we play, like, really fucked up melancholy music. Like, if I find out that I've been nominated for an Emmy, and I have. No, not recently. Sorry. That wasn't an announcement. I was just... I'm saying, these experiences where it's, like, in a biopic, you're supposed to simply just go, like, huh. Like, it's more when it happens in real life, when you go like I just won this thing, or I just achieved this thing, or that thing I was working on really hard, it's getting picked up and it's going to go, and it's you got I tend to just like I seek isolation in those moments.
Yeah.
And melancholy.
Well, so do I.
It has something to do with like the same fact that the way we appreciate food is we destroy it, we shit it out, like our saliva has enzymes in it that break a thing down so that we can use it in a real way. And I love nothing more if I'm having a really good professional time. Like, I love to celebrate it quietly and but with a drink, staring out a window at a Michael Mann Los Angeles skyline, and play something really synthy and sad and heroin sounding, and kind of like, and definitely not smile. Like, if the camera panned around me, the director might go, come on, give me a little, you just got nominated for an Emmy. And no, this is what it looks like. It looks like fucking, like, yeah, whoever would have thought. You know, you just sort of, like, slump into it. I'm happy so much that I'm always just doing that.
That's good to hear.
Because like, if I was waiting tables, if I was lifting crates and stuff, and I've had those jobs, not crates, but like, yeah, you come home and then you go right for the, you grab a beer and you chug it down and you call a friend and you're like, well, let's have some fun. Woo-hoo! That might be age too. Like, I haven't done that stuff since that age, but I have a feeling that like working a 12-hour shift at an emergency room makes you want to go out and smile a lot. Excuse me. But like, if you get paid to be in your pajamas for 4 months of the year, and then drink Starbucks and talk about how to make people laugh for the other part of the year, like, and then if also people tell you that you're doing it well, I don't know how often you'd smile, because what's the point?
Yeah, I think of the times when I felt like when I was really at my lowest, and like when I was really broke and being evicted, and like things started finally happening for me, like with work. Like you don't run out and smile and like call your friends and celebrate. You sit in the corner in the dark and cry. Like that some of the happiest moments I've ever had was being completely alone and just like crumpled into a heap.
But you just said back in those days when both you and I were broke, you were being evicted and all that stuff. To correct you on that or clarify, when we would go out, we were laughing all the time.
Yeah, I'm saying that the first moment when the first moment of safety when the phone call came in, that a job came in, when you were going to be on a show, or like work came in, you don't go like woohoo, like it's in the way that you use it. My knees gave out a couple of times, and you just lay on the floor. And you
you're talking about those moments.
And you put on sad music. Then later on, when you recover, I called up you, and you and I would go out there, and then we would sit there and giggle at our fortune because you and I were paying each other's bills for a couple of years. Like we were surviving off of each other's alternate good fortune. There were times when you and I've never seen you or I laugh as much, but I agree with you in those moments when you're really like happy alone. It's not, you're not Gene Kelly, you know, dancing down the street. You're in the corner, or in your car, you know, like being wistful and melancholy.
Yeah. Yeah, and who's crankier than, I don't know, rich people getting what they want? Like they're not, because they're not really experiencing like genuine reasons to be happy.
Like I like my
getting a candy bar when you're starving, that's like a big deal. Getting a really good Kobe steak when you can have anything you want to eat. Like people tend to go like, oh, it was a little undercooked. Like you still enjoy the steak, but the way you express it is with a foodie blog where you complain. You nitpick. Whereas the person who is starving and you hand them a fucking Snickers bar, they would like kiss it and like break into tongues. Snickers bar! So fucking hungry! I've been lost in the snow. Wolves are eating me and I found toothpaste. I'm going to eat it. Happiness is like, it's not always an expression of like satisfaction. It's an expression of like going from one extreme to the other. It's like that portamento, is that what they call it? Slide whistle. You know, going, sliding from one thing to the other while your fingers are on the frets. All right, that's our music segment. Let's bring out relationship expert Aaron McGavin!
My betrothed, ooh, little strawberry hair,
like my daddy
gonna
did.
Get married to an ogre man. Gonna love it.
Hello, Aaron.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How's it going?
Good. Fun show.
Yeah, it's all right. It's had its moments. It's had its ups and a lot of downs.
I'm enjoying it a lot. I feel very happy.
Well, there's something wrong with you. That's how I receive compliments. It's called deflection. It's a new gateway. like a new Oprah book, like a guy selling a book. Like, did you know about deflection? Just deflect compliments, deflect insults. Just repeat to yourself the following phrase. I'm rubber. Don't worry what they're made out of. You're rubber. I'm rubber. Whatever you say about me bounces off. That's it. Nice haircut? Fuck off. Dan, that sounded racist? You parked wrong? You scratched my car? I don't care.
Have you lost weight?
I'm rubber.
Have you lost some weight?
Thank you.
You're not rubber, you piece of shit.
Not when I want something to be true.
So what's life like now that you guys are engaged, like around the house? Like, has it changed any interactions?
Well, I have to wash the veil every day. I wear a veil every day.
And it gets so dirty, you have to wash it every day.
You've seen our house. It can get a little cluttered.
What are you doing to dirty your veil all the time?
Well
we're Methodist.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
So, you do the math.
Yeah. Every morning, Dan baptizes me. We fill up the bathtub, and we write our vows on rose petals, but they come from the garden, and we don't clean them off. And I'm wearing the veil. Baptism, it gets dirty.
Yeah.
These are just traditions.
The garden has our neighbor's dogs buried in it. That's the Methodist part.
Yeah.
Did you guys kill the dogs?
If they don't die on schedule, that's God asking you to It's called dog death schedule. It's Methodist.
The old saying, kill a dog with a knife, be happily married for the rest of your life. We're just doing that as many times as we can, and we don't want to kill our own dog because we like our dog.
Kill a dog every Wednesday. That's the special spiritual friends way.
Which is the name of our denomination of Methodist Special Spiritual Friends. If anyone's interested, we'll
kill a dog on Sunday night, Monday morning, fuck or fight. That's more of the Appalachian.
Fuck or fight a dog or another person?
Each other.
So if you kill a dog on what Wednesday night?
Kill a dog every Wednesday.
Oh, that's Spiritual Friends Day.
Yeah, yeah.
Sunday night, fuck or fight.
Yeah, if you have a question, there's a pamphlet under your seat.
And if you don't have any questions but just want to leave, there are armed guards at every door. Welcome to methodology, we call it. You're now Methodists.
Are you guys excited to be married? To be betrothed?
I'm excited.
Yeah. I would do it tomorrow, but I want the wedding to be.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, it's not. I mean.
Well, yeah. I guess I would hope. I mean, it would be bad if you proposed. If you're like, well, hopefully in 6 months I'll want this.
I want to make sure the ceremony's good. But I also want to. Well, I don't. Spoilers. It's gonna be
spoilers.
I want it to be. I'm gonna do a concept wedding.
Who is gonna be the? Can you say who the officiant is going to be?
We haven't decided on that yet, and we can't talk about that any further.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Noam
There'll be a lot of blood.
Noam Chomsky.
Noam Chomsky. Do you take this woman?
But first, let me talk to you about advertising.
For indoctrinated or unindoctrinated, to be confined to... margins of ideology,
Jeff,
that are predetermined by an industrial military complex.
Jeff, if you were to officiate our wedding, what would be your style?
Jazz. I would do it in blackface, of course. Are you asking me to officiate your wedding? Is that what's going on?
No, I am not.
I'll tell you, my style would be to say no if you asked me. But if I were pressed, I would do it fast and jazzy.
Yeah.
Lots of tapping. There'll be tap.
Oh, well, that would be kind of fun. If you came out on like a grand piano, just started tapping,
I would emerge like Ben Vereen from All That Jazz in a white tuxedo, and I would come.
And you would forget to actually marry us. Like, you would do the whole show and then leave, and we're like, where's Jeff? Oh, he's at the drawing room.
he just did the last three songs from Cats, but he never married anybody.
I do need you to be a groomsman, if you would do me the honor.
For real? Ooh.
Yeah, well, you saw that coming. There's seven bridesmaids, and I have three friends.
I would be honored and be quite happy to.
Thank you.
What are we going to wear? What are you going
to... Spoilers.
I don't know.
Something bloodproof.
Something bloodproof?
We're really into Game of Thrones.
We're Methodists. Our weddings are different.
You're doing a red wedding?
Spoilers.
Yeah.
Someone said nice. I
wonder if anybody has that. For sure there's been a red wedding, like two huge Game of Thrones fans have fallen in love and gotten married and have had like a, at least on some scale,
sure,
have had some kind of red wedding like gag.
And there's Aunt Hilda at the wedding who like has to be splashed by blood but needs to be a good sport, and everyone's given a I want to talk about blood so badly.
Without spoiling the wedding, are you guys doing high concept shit? Because I know, Aaron, you like, when you throw parties, they tend towards the high concept spectrum.
I would like my wedding to be, as a good ceremony should, it will be a narrative event. There will be a story told. You will you will feel like you're a part of something that's more than just the standard story of let's get dressed up, let's go to the wedding. Okay, that was a wedding. There will be a concept in that regard.
What will the call to adventure be?
However, none of that. If we're talking about a thing that happens a year from now, but also, in keeping with my personal philosophies of entertainment, the people that come to the wedding, they have to not be put upon by the concept. They have to just be like swept up in it. And they could just have a good time regardless of it.
Yeah, and you notice that Dan keeps on saying my wedding. That's because we're having two separate weddings. I will be marrying the idea of Dan, and then he'll be marrying the idea of me. We'll tell each other about it afterwards. Mine will be in a pool of blood. Yeah, it's going to be great. There's going to be a good story. We're writing the story together. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
I like it. We're good collaborators. We don't get on each other.
Yeah, we like doing stuff together. I still really want us to write a sci-fi rom-com.
For the wedding or just like for a thing?
Just in general, because Dan and I have had several like joke arguments about the two genres and combining the two. That's all.
Yeah.
It's not a fruitful
The big bummer about our relationship is that our shared love is sitting and eating and watching movies. Mm-hmm. But there's a distinct breakdown in the types of movies we would like to watch. And I really liked Clueless. I did. I thought it was uplifting and interesting. And I liked 27 Dresses. I really did.
27 Dresses.
I thought it was charming and sweet. And we both liked Her.
Because that's a sci-fi.
A sci-fi romantic comedy. Yeah. But other than that, we're fucked. And it's just we really say mean things. Not about each other, but just like we just get mean. I just go like, okay, yeah, why don't you just type in, Paul Rudd gets his groove back and fucking, I'll just focus on my farming game on my iPad. And then she's like, well, what if Paul Rudd explodes and someone has to jump away in slow motion? And then we get Aaron's thing is that she observed the fact that I honestly do not care if the acting, the directing, even the writing, if it's kind of bad, as long as the things that are happening in the movie have something to do with robots,
right? Flash,
dinosaurs,
Flash Gordon.
Zombies, explosions, spaceships, anything really though, like something like happening. I need a threshold to be crossed. Other than like, oh my god, I have to help my boss meet my sister. Like, that should be happening in the background of a real story where someone's coffee cup has a snake in it, you know, that, like, if it gets into your brain, it knows what you think and can tell your friend what you think, and then snakes start spreading throughout.
What's that movie called?
Decaf Cobra.
Decaf Cobra. No.
Snakes on a brain.
Fuck you, Adam.
Right. Snakes on a brain.
You've been undone.
What if there was a movie about two murderous androids?
I'm in. All right. I don't care what you say next. I'm in. That's how easy I am.
But what if there was less violence, but the two androids are approaching each other in the station, just the station, and but they're holding a bunch of cogs and bolts and stuff, and they run into each other and like, oh no, that's mine, no, that's mine, come on, and then they have this like.
If Spike Jonze directs it, I'm down. I'll watch it.
I know you're laws of attraction.
I know you're trying to trick me. I thought what you were trying to do anyway was that you were going to go, what if there was a movie about androids that were so lifelike that the whole movie was just them running into each other and not liking each other. The whole and this takes place in the future when like androids have totally taken over. So everyone's an android, and these two androids, like one of them has 27 bridesmaids dresses, and the other one's.
Frequently, like I'll say.
That's what she said. She said it's murderous androids, but it's not really about violence. It's more about them just workplace drama.
But what I will do now, because frequently Dan will fall asleep, and then that's the time when I'll put on these shitty movies, and he'll wake up and respond to something that's said in the movie, and it won't make any sense, and he'll be angry that I'm watching the movie. When you do that the next time, I'm going to tell you that Ashton Kutcher is an alien or something, or a murderous robot, and then you'll enjoy it.
Can we?
And
all,
it'll probably make more sense.
Because my girlfriend, she likes dramas like 1 hours, and we watch Nashville together. Can we all come into my place and watch fucking Nashville? This show is fucking nuts. Does anybody watch Nashville? I'm sad that anybody here has. That's the fucking worst. My very good friend Chip is on it. This show, wow. It's nothing is beneath this show, and yet I have fallen in love with it. Also, we have to watch The Baby. We watched The Baby. 1973, a film called The Baby. Anybody? No. Fucking dig it. It's a cult movie. We watched it at Shrab's place the other night. We should all watch this movie and then come in and talk about it. The less said about it beforehand, the better. But fucking 1973, The Baby.
The Baby.
It's a welfare worker goes to a family that has raised a fully grown man as an infant. And so these hot kind of fetishy chicks are changing his diaper. And he's 25, but he's a baby. He's a baby, and they take his diaper off, and then they fuck him at night, and they chase him around with a cattle prod. And it's a very good movie.
I just conjured like this childhood memory I have of going to my sister's hospital. My sister had Rett syndrome at birth, and she was at this hospital. And there was a lot of retarded people in the hospital. And I remember visiting her as a kid and not knowing she was my sister, but like we were going to visit her. And then I always have this, like, I remember the smell. You know, I smell like if you, like, it's that diaper smell. Like, every time I smell it, kind of like I really get placed there. And I remember walking on this linoleum and these fluorescent lights and kind of wandering off while people took pictures with my sister and wandering down this linoleum hallway and following the sound of this weird sound of this person going, moo, 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 moo. And then I walked into this room and there was this crib. And there was rows of cribs. And there were adults in all of them. And I looked into there was a team of like nurses around the one where the sound was coming from, and it was this guy. He didn't have Down syndrome. He was just, you know, there's a lot of ways to be developmentally disabled, and this guy just looked like a porn star. He just looked like a guy. He looked like a porn star because he was naked. He looked like he had a mustache, a finely groomed 70s mustache, and he had like a hot comb. Side parted haircut, like it just like he would just be a guy that worked where my dad worked, but he was in a diaper, and he was going moo 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 moo, and then they finally gave him his moo moo, which was like this squeaky moo cow toy, and I was just this kid, I was just wandering in and seeing this, and it was. I don't know if it was traumatizing, because I don't. When I think about it, I don't.
It was
go,
and for that's all why of us.
Well, I'm upset because you just spoiled the plot of our wedding. all the groomsmen were going to be in the little cribs. Steve A.G. was going
to
wheel them.
It definitely stuck with me. I mean, I think it was kind of a sandbaggy way to expose a kid to institutionalized mental health.
Yeah,
like that was not what I maybe needed to see if I was going to grow up to believe in therapy. I don't know. I'm not gonna blame that on. I don't know. I think therapists are also stupid. We should not forget that. But also, I just think of this guy, this diaper. I was like I don't know. I felt like I was like what that guy looks like my dad. Like why does he want his moo moo? And why are they treating him like a baby? I mean he's like in a crib. It's weird. He was like 35.
So how soon do you want to watch this movie?
This baby movie?
I don't know.
If you had a movie...
The interesting thing about that memory is that I haven't consumed it with my ego-driven mythologization of memories. You know the way we do that? We go like, then my mom said this, and then I said that, and that's why I'm so into purple. You know? and then once you've decided that, like, you kind of, like, you refine it, and you're like, oh, well, let's shore up these edges that kind of contradict the fact that this is why I like purple. Let's make my mom really into red. And that memory is so distinct, but I haven't co-opted it in any way that I know of, because I don't know how to feel about it. It's just so distinct. It's just like I could draw every tile of that linoleum floor. I could create every smell if I knew how to create smells. I know what you're gonna say.
We both know. There's no need to say it. If you had a moo-moo, like if you, let's say that like something happened where you witnessed something really tragic all of a sudden and you had a psychotic break and you were sent to a place like this and you reverted back to infancy, what would be your moo-moo? What would be the thing that you were calling for all the time?
Vodka.
But that's different. That's not the same. But it's not like he cradles a vodka bottle at night. No.
So, well,
what would be the comfort
item? Well, the sad thing is, it would just be like iPhone.
Yeah. Fofo.
Fofo.
Ring ring. Ring ring.
Ring ring. Yeah. I don't know. It'd be a picture of you, I'm sure.
Aww.
Let's get Spencer out, shall we? Spencer.
Hey guys, I think probably everyone has already forgot this, but when I was on the academic decathlon team in high school, I wanted to make the name of our team Snakes on a Brain.
For real?
Yeah, no one remembers.
Wait, that's how recently you were in high school?
Yes.
Snakes on a Plane was in theaters?
I think it had just came out, yeah.
Wow.
That's fucking shocking.
That is sobering.
Everyone, shut up.
How old are you, Spencer?
I'm 24.
24.
What are you trying to...
Nah, I'm just casting my mind back to 24.
24. Okay.
24.
Yeah, I think I was a drag character at Disneyland in a sketch show. I was dressing up as a woman.
For Disney?
Yeah. Yeah, we wrote these sketches for Disneyland. I think they still do them in Frontierland. And I had to put on a, I was Sally Mae, the ugly daughter of the mayor of Frontierland.
Oh, well, that wasn't fair. I'm sure you were very
well.
Pretty.
Also, I played the mayor and the sheriff too, but I frequently would dress up in a big gingham dress and a big curly Q wig. And we were the only characters allowed to have men that could have facial hair like stubble, because if we were unshaven, it was funnier. Because if we were women, and the joke was that we were ugly. It was like we had to be really ugly. And when women played that character, not cool, because the joke was that she was ugly. So it was funnier if like 6'4" guys with stubble played the gal.
I was in a melodrama play, like a the Dudley Do-Right type production when I like a in Poway, California, which has kind of a Western history. Are you from Poway? Oh,
wow.
Cool. sorry, I just have a lot of feelings about Poway. So I was in this production, and I was the female lead, and I had the like a big blonde wig and a ton of makeup and that like a gingham dress and all that, and I thought I looked really pretty, and I have a bunch of pictures. Like, I took way too many pictures of myself during this time, and the male lead was my boyfriend at the time, and I thought it was the best thing ever. Invited everyone I knew to it, even though it was the shittiest thing in the world. And opening night, one of the things I had to do was like go into the front row and like sit on the lap of some man, and it would make the Dudley Do-Right character jealous. And I sat on the lap of a man, and I heard him say to his friend, like, "Get this guy off me," because they thought I was wearing so much makeup that they thought I was in drag, which I basically was. I was in drag. I was like looking, was trying to look like a really va 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 voom woman. But boy, was that a bummer.
That really what kind
of bummer?
Why does he need his friend to help him get a guy off him? Like, I can't imagine myself ever saying that. Jeff, get this guy off me.
maybe he was worried his friend thought he was gay and that he was in the closet and he was self-conscious.
No, that's really interesting. Yeah. In the moment he was like, that's what he wanted, because he knew the words that came out of his mouth couldn't be, I'm not into this, yeah, to his friend.
And if he would have thought I was a woman, he would have said, I'm going to fuck her later.
Yeah.
Really aggressively.
She sat on me because she wants it.
Yeah, and I want it too. I want it so bad. I really do. I promise I'm going to get it in her so far in.
It's going to come the out
front,
of her ears.
The front, not the back.
And then I'm going to build a bridge. I'm going to build a bridge.
Did I tell you the story about this is probably a story I shouldn't tell, but I'm going to because I've had a few. Disneyland, Frontierland, and we get our costumes at, I think I've told the story before, right? We get our costumes at Disneyland where all of the princesses would get their costumes. So you'd walk in the morning and I was a cowboy, or I was a mayor, or I was a bandit, or I was this Sally Mae character. And Snow White or Cinderella or Ariel or Esmeralda, like all the Disney princesses would be in their underwear walking about with their hair and makeup, but in their bras and panties on, which is fucking fantastic. It was really good. And like Ariel's, they had a little rack of clams. They had a little clamshell bras, but like, and like that's like one set of clams is way bigger than the other ones. And her name was Stephanie, I remember. I was like, whose clams are those? And I said, she's new. She's Stephanie. She has giant clams.
She hasn't figured out how to use the clams. It's like Demolition Man.
Wow.
No. Deep cut.
Okay. It's a deep cut. You derailed me.
You had sex with one.
No.
And you wanted
to
so bad.
You. And then Roy Disney
his ghost
came in and
you
said,
in here.
Thank you. No one's ever fucked a princess like this. How did you do that? I'm just doing what I do. Well, you get out here. We're giving you the Dumbo Award for elephant trunk dick having. For making us believe that a man can fly with his penis. We at Disneyland would like to honor you, Jeffrey Brian Davis.
Please insert this feather.
Oh, here's your free ostrich leg.
So anyway, there was a gal that played Pocahontas for a while at Disneyland, and she was, let's just say, the hottest thing on the planet Earth. She more dads took photos with this Pocahontas than children. She was just like Kablamo. As Warren Thomas would say, she came from the planet Punani. And she was just like, wowee. And the Pocahontas outfit is a bit scant. Like it's revealing. And she was very sweet and young, like Orange County girl. And she came into our dressing room. And my dressing room was me and two other guys that were in the sketch comedy troupe. And one of us alternately would be either the mayor, the sheriff, or Sally Mae, the ugly daughter of the mayor of Frontierland. So we'd be in there. And it's always hot because it's summertime in California. And Pocahontas came in just to say hi. And she left. And my friend Joe, who was in the cast, and he's gay and he's very sweet. Pocahontas left and he just went into song, and I'll never fucking forget this, and this is really bad, but I repeat this for no reason. The song was, because she just left and we kind of just left in her wake of like, and he went, there once was an Indian maid who said she wasn't afraid to lie on her back in the old bear shack and let the cowboys tickle her crack. But one day, to her surprise, her belly began to rise, and up from her cunt jumped a little red runt with his ass between his eyes. Disneyland.
You know, that song would have made the gender issues episode so much more fun.
Why was the child deformed?
Look, we can start the questions right now. I have 30. I don't know why.
Why
I will say
deformed?
It's the most inflammatorily racist thing I've ever heard in my life. And it was the fact that it was sung backstage at a Disneyland dressing room made it all the more sweet.
Does that have something to do with the fact that she made love by letting them tickle her crack? So he had an ass between his eyes because that was his identity?
She said she wasn't afraid to lie on her back in the old bear shack. First, my question is, what's a bear shack?
I figure that's just where you cure your pelts.
And it's where you it's a place that you
beef
think
Beef Bill knows what I'm talking about. Or beef. Beef God.
Beef steak.
Beef God.
Just Bill.
Oh, he's a beef God.
Well, you know, he's graduated. He took his abuse.
One day he'll just be Bill.
He's Galvatron now. But no, you're a woodsman and a. You have to cure. Yes, you gotta cure. You gotta cure hides and stuff.
What would you say a bear shack was?
I'm just guessing.
Would you, if you were an Indian maid, be afraid to lie on your back in the old bear shack and let the cowboys tickle your crack?
Not if I was Pocahontas.
Not if
or if you thought that they were going to kill you if you didn't let them do it.
Oh. Yeah, okay.
I'm just kidding, but I like the reaction I got.
Yeah, the song has troubled me for a long time.
I'll reverse the sexism. When I was in college, me and a friend of mine would go to the local mall and walk outside of the Abercrombie and Fitch where the male models were and just laugh.
Did you sing a song about them?
No, I mean, there once was a guy named Todd who had a giant rod. He took off his shirt and sat in the dirt and got a job at Abercrombie & Fitch. It wasn't a popular song. That's the first time it's ever been sung.
It's an unusual rhyme scheme.
Yeah. It's ABC4.
That's a term, yeah.
Spencer, yeah. Do you know any ribald nursery rhymes or tunes?
That's a weird line to bring me in on.
I'm sure there's a lot of rhymes about you because when you were born, isn't it true that your balls were bigger than an adult's?
Yeah, but the problem with that is, okay, so it's like Spencer was born, his balls as big as oranges. Then you stop. You can't go any further. Nothing rhymes.
Were your balls as big as oranges? Didn't you say your balls were as big as a human heart or something like that before?
I'm sure, yeah. I think my dad said that.
Have your balls mellowed out to a more regular size? Are your balls still as big as oranges right now?
Well, I mean, most of the time they're down there, just normal size.
But they can occasionally assume orange?
Yeah, they engorge and grow fur.
Jesus
on the full
Christ!
Moon.
Really?
Yeah, really on the full moon.
Yeah. He has.
Penis. Nope. Testicles. I was close.
No, I was just trying to think. Werewolf is where the were part is actually the man part, but we often make the mistake of going, oh, I'm like a were soda. I turn into a soda. No, that's. No, that would be right.
Yeah, right? If you said I was a soda wolf, that'd be more suspect.
Right. Were soda. I mean, nothing bad happens, but it's dangerous, depending on where I am.
Remember Connor? Remember Connor's conundrums?
Shit, wow.
Whatever happened to that kid? You think he, went basketball diaries on us after we stopped using his conundrums?
Someone tried to rob him, and he said, would you rather...
Die. Keep robbing me, or have a wing on your butt. And the person was like, that's a terrible conundrum. And he's like, that's what Harmon Toad said. And he just ran off into the night. Now he's under a bridge, warming his hands over a coffee can next to some guy named Duke. A nice guy, a guy who's seen the ropes under that bridge, too, telling him about all the other people. That over there is Rosie. You don't want to talk to her about her baby.
He doesn't know the ropes, but he's seen them.
He doesn't know the ropes of non-homelessness. Is that what you mean?
He said he's a guy that lives under the bridge and has seen the ropes.
Oh, he's seen the ropes. Okay, yeah, sorry. Yeah,
it's a rope bridge.
I told you I'd get as drunk as you before that. All right, so let's what do you think about Dungeons & Dragons? Do you like playing it, or do you hate it?
I enjoy it. I like playing Magic the Gathering a bit more. That's a surprising reaction.
I've never played that. Briefly describe to me
the
merits of
Magic. You know how in D&D you fight, but most of the time you fight with swords? Like, if you're a wizard, you'd be fighting with spells. So the point is you're wizards that are using spells to kill each other, and the spells might be, I summon a goat, or it might be, I shoot fire at your face. So basically that, and you it's strategy-based.
They're just the two.
Just goats and lightning bolts.
I don't like it. You know what I like about D&D? I don't know if you've noticed, is the yelling. I like getting in verbal fights.
You like getting inflamed for no reason.
Yeah. No reason?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, sure. Sometimes I'll fly off the handle if someone suggests that the definition of friendship is not eating my face.
That's not what he said. Right. God damn, we've been through
Anyways.
I was not here for the mature witch one. I heard it was quite funny, and I did not hear the D&D. What briefly went down?
Let's see. He attacked, and then you guys attacked him back. And
what's with this informal bullshit?
Yeah, should we
start it up properly?
I don't know.
Hey, have you heard of Starbound?
Yeah, it's yeah.
Is there?
We got a lot of nerds.
Can I get it already, or is it like not
I
out
don't
yet?
Think. Oh yeah. Shit! Really?
Is it like Minecraft, where you get it?
Let's just cut the show off now.
Let's all run and play.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's made by the creators of Terraria, except it's more space based. There's more world exploration.
Is it 2D like Terraria?
Yeah, bits and blocks.
Oh,
That's what they call those games.
I mean, I like the immersiveness of a 3D environment, Spencer.
Well, then you do. You know, some people don't appreciate the subtleties of sprite-based art, but, you know.
Ow! One person does.
But I can play it on a Mac?
I don't know.
Cross-platform.
There you go.
All right.
Let's bring that guy up.
Play Rust instead.
Nope.
No. One more question about Starbound.
Uh-huh.
Can I pay for it without having to get a PayPal or Amazon Jagoff account?
I mean, probably. Who cares, man? I'll do
Steam?
It.
Steam? See, that's a lot of... There's a lot of these...
Credit cards.
Well, I don't... all right. I'll deal with it at home. You guys doing... Also, should I clean out my garage?
It's fine. Right. It's pretty
bare. It's starting to smell like...
Wait, how do you know about the spiders?
How do you think they got there?
Anyway, Adam Goldberg just mentioned the spiders, and suddenly I'm freaked out.
Have spiders.
Oh, well, we have a... Oh, I've talked about it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. She genuinely panicked that Adam Goldberg had been in our garage.
So note that, Adam. I'm kidding.
I love that it really threw you. You're like, wait a minute, Adam's been in our garage? Like, he's just down there, just hanging out. I like
counting
those
spiders.
We have a lot of spiders. All right.
Spencer.
What?
Oh shit!
Last time on Harmontown, our heroes had journeyed down an ice hole and found a hissing skeleton named Lenev. They had complex and disturbing interactions with the skeleton, setting him off on a path of violence. Lenev choked Sharpie, but Sharpie shot back with a burst of electricity, staggering the dead man. Mulrain caught fire with her armulet of summer and grabbed Lenev's arm, while Quark cut said arm off. The wounded skeleton began to transform, growing two new arms and attacking Sharpie with his new limbs. The party changed tacts. Mulrain reattached Lenev's arm while Christaberg rubbed meat on it. Together, they fashioned a paper hairpiece for Lenev's skull, which stopped him dead in his tracks. They quit fighting, joined hands, and strolled off down the path towards Tormod Tor, the city of Unshackled Dead. That's pretty much it.
So we made friends with him, which I think is pretty admirable.
You made friends with Lenev?
Yeah.
And you reattached an arm and gave him a toupee?
That was just sort of a gesture. Some of those guys, we had cut off his arm and then we reattached it, and we had some meat that we rubbed around it because we thought that what a skeleton would enjoy is having meat on his arm.
Yeah, made sense to me at the time.
But more importantly, and this was the thing that sealed the deal, we started making him construction paper hair. Because I think that even when he wasn't a skeleton, he maybe was bald and was insecure about it. That's a speculation. That's not canon. But we are now his friend again, and You're welcome.
Did we find the tarragon of virtue? What the fuck was it called?
No.
No, we're off to the Tor to
Tormod of Tor.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now we have Lenev with us as a compatriot.
Because Christenberg is possessed and we want to cure him.
Right.
Wherever he is.
All right. Yeah. Lenev, how far off is Tormod of Tor?
Oh, it's like a couple minutes. You know, we're just,
What do you mean wherever Christenberg is?
I mean, where is he?
Is he here?
I don't see him.
His character sheet's on the table in front of you.
Oh, shit. I just got told. I guess he is here. Okay. Christenberg's here. He's still tied up by that muzzle. Yeah, 3 minutes off is what I answered your question with.
All right. Time passes.
Oh, yeah, it does. As time passes, you pass by broken gray pillars and piles of glittering black glass, shattered, razor-sharp fragments that are strewn about the dusty ground. Lenev speaks. He says, as I was trying to say before all that happened, the unshackled are generally peaceful, but down here there's more crawling around than just Tormod Tor's own, citizens. The chained ones still shamble around, their mindless horrors that seek not but to snuff out the life of anyone. Be on your guard, because the chained ones hear no reason like me.
And so there was no route that took us around this area?
No, they're all around everywhere.
They're everywhere. There's a big circle around
walls.
Where we're going.
They don't just... Well, this is going nowhere. They go wherever life is.
All right.
You guys are full of it.
Ha 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 ha!
So
you meant... Okay.
Are we close to Tormod Tor?
Yeah, a couple minutes.
Okay.
Jesus.
I say we keep running and avoid these chained ones, you guys.
Yeah, let's pick it up.
We pick up the pace.
Gentlemen, as we're running, may I ask you, how are you guys feeling about this whole quest in general and emotionally? How are we doing? How are we feeling?
I feel pretty good.
We haven't checked in a while.
I feel good. I've got like 72 HP.
No, but how many is that, hit points or heart points?
Really?
72.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I'm fit as a fucking fiddle.
I take my knife and stab him in the thigh.
What the fuck?
I want to talk.
I defend myself in a violent way, and I take out my mighty greatsword and parry it.
Oh, shit.
Why, look, you just attacked me with a knife, Jack. Mulraine.
Yeah.
Sorry, look, I acted impulsively. I just wanted...
I know! Now the fucking daggers are drawn, motherfucker.
No, but look, at the end of the day, what matters is who
what
we are...
What matters right now is you fucking pulled a knife on me and tried to stab me. That's what matters to me right in the moment.
I spit in his face.
What the fuck?
Talk to me!
I was talking until you fucking pulled a weapon on me. I'm a barbarian. I'll fucking bleed you real slow.
I thought today would
I'll
be
make
the
you
day
leak.
We got more than 5 feet down there.
We were about to until she fucking tried to stab me.
We're running.
We're not running. Now we're fucking fighting. What are you doing?
All right, I'm sorry.
So you don't stab me.
I won't stab you. I take my eyelashes and I flutter them over his wound. Or where it would be, because I didn't stab him. All right, let's go.
I make her walk in front of me and I have my greatsword drawn just in case she gets fucking weird again.
Is homicide contagious around you people? You don't do things that make sense.
I didn't provoke that in any way.
All you, I mean,
said,
you're boasting about your hit points.
So you stab a person?
I'm not justifying anybody.
I feel really good. I'll kill you.
Come on, guys. Let's get to Toll House.
Lenev, okay. as long as we're giving notes, if there's a place and then outside the place there's a place where there's a bunch of monsters, unless they exist in a fucking circle around the place, there's got to be a way around... You're taking us through the unshackled and telling us they're monsters.
It's a dangerous world, man. I don't know what you want me to do.
I'm not worried about anything except for possibly Mulraine, because she's schizophrenic.
It's true.
All right, let's go. But if there's an encounter, it's on you.
Okay.
I've got 72 hit points.
I get a little twitchy, but I calm myself.
Okay, so you continue down. You continue down the path. You see a destroyed, blown out kind of hut. You see the roof of the hut, and then the walls are kind of just falling onto the floor like it's top just collapsed. And then you go by a broken fence. It's just like a fence, but it's all broken. It doesn't work to keep stuff out of places.
Should we check out the hut?
Yes.
Or just keep trotting.
Let's check out this hut.
If you want to check out that hut, you better be on your guard, because those unchained ones, they go in huts sometimes.
I use my stealth, and I creep towards the hut.
I vote for no hut, but if you're a hut lover.
I think I may be a hut lover.
Do you have stealth? Are you a stealthy
person?
Yeah,
I have stealth, yeah. Okay.
Anyone can be kind of stealthy, even if they don't.
You don't have
to
take that away from me.
Will you come back if you see anything hazardous, and we'll just go?
Yeah. You know, if there's something hazardous, I will use my boots of spry springing, and I will sing a special song, and you'll know it when you hear it.
There once was an Indian maid.
All right.
So, try not to judge me for singing it.
So you creep towards the hut, and you hear the sound of maybe like chomping and gobbling, probably. Those sounds.
Okay.
You don't see anything, but you do see something. You see the roof of the hut kind of shake and shimmy. I don't know what huts do.
They don't dance.
I guess not. It's definitely shaking, though.
Okay.
Scoops.
Okay, there once was an Indian maid.
Okay, let's go. Let's keep going.
Who had a crack? It was very itchy.
We should just keep going.
Okay, they walk on ahead, but I walk around the back of that shack, and I put my ear up to the wall and listen to the chomping.
Oh, boy.
It's louder now because your ear's closer.
Can I see through?
Nope, it's just a roof. There's not even any way to, like, get in.
I kick in the back wall of the hut.
What in the fucking Harmon?
You kick in the back wall of the hut, and it just kind of crumbles to pieces as if it were, like, wet, rotting wood, which it's not. It's like some sort of sheet metal. That's weird. Anyway, you see, it's a zombie. It's a zombie naked and full of flesh. His mouth is just gaping open, full of flesh. He's trying to chomp on it, but his mouth's broken. He's like got a broken jaw or something.
He's trying to chomp on what?
Flesh. Dead flesh.
I take my greatsword and slash at his neck.
Okay.
Roll that
You
shit.
Sure do. You cut it clean off. He's not too, he's dead.
I wipe my sword on the ground, and I look around.
You cut to me and Lenev just hanging out in the snow. Oh. And I just kind of, and I go, is there a Mrs. Lenev?
No.
All right, now you can come back to Jeff.
I examine the hut.
It's just like you see two corpses now. There was, you know, a corpse and a zombie, but now there's two corpses. One's half eaten.
And there's nothing else in the hut?
No, it's just a roof, really. Just the roof on the ground.
All right, I fuck both of the corpses and I run back to the to our campaign and let them know what happened.
Do you all fuck right. them like? Till you finish?
No, I just that, now it's just kind of cursory.
Until they finish,
it's just kind of like a
it's like what the
cursory thing that I do.
Well, the kids have a thing called teabagging on the multiplayer games. They teabag each other.
They put
multiplayer shooters. They you crouch over the face of your victim.
What?
And it's symbolic that you're teabagging them.
No, I actually fuck them.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, you're doing a thing that it's not a sexual act. It's an act of anger.
I generally enter any combat situation with a mild erection. And so I'm like the Comanche of old, where I enter war with a certain amount of tumescence. And I I'm not saying I'm a good person. I'm just saying that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I fuck most of my thwarted foes.
Remind me not to.
Do you have any more questions?
How are you feeling?
I feel great until you tried to stab me earlier. I have 72 hit points. I run back up to the group. I go, kill the zombies. Fucked a couple people, but everything seems to be cool.
Oh, did you meet Jerry?
No, I run back to the hut.
You see a half-eaten corpse and another corpse without a head.
I yell, Jerry?
You get no response.
I run back. I go, no, I didn't meet Jerry.
No. Oh.
I might have fucked Jerry, but he didn't have a lot to add.
Well, whatever.
Who's Jerry, Lenev?
He's just a friend of mine.
Well, did he look like a guy and I described the corpse?
No.
Okay, then I fucked somebody else. Who's Jerry?
You just ran off for about 2 minutes to go fuck something?
No, I heard some rumbling. I thought there might be some fucking, some bad things going on. There was. I killed a zombie. I fucked them both.
As a skeleton, are you friends with zombies?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
is Jerry a zombie?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Okay, full disclosure, I might have killed Jerry and fucked him.
Well, you described Jerry. You described someone that's different from Jerry.
I described the zombie that I killed. And,
you already described that, didn't you?
Oh, I thought I was describing the corpse he was chomping on.
Either way, not
I started
Jerry.
Eating
not
people.
Jerry.
No.
Okay,
sorry.
So Lenev.
Sorry, everybody.
Lenev, that's good to know. So in the future, if I see a zombie, these might be your pals?
I guess.
Okay. All right. That's good to know.
It's like a...
If I see any humans, are they your pals?
Yeah.
Sharpie?
Yeah.
Sharpie, leave it.
I'm not...
Leave it.
I don't...
I was certain you're going to hear that as some sort of weird passive-aggressive threat.
No, that's not a... I mean, I'm not insane. That's just a...
You're insane?
That's a poignant observation.
But so is the...
Okay. I start running towards Timberland.
Torm out of Tor.
You run down the path, and it's pretty dark, but as a half-elf, you could see a little bit. You see a crumbling gray wall. It's massive and imperious, except it's cracked in many places, and you see it's attempted to have been plastered a bunch of times. There's all sorts of plaster patches. In the middle, there's a big, giant wooden gate, but it looks all rotted. Rotted gate.
Rotted, but intact?
Yeah, it's definitely still standing.
I go up and I kick the gate. I'm in a kicking mood.
You kick the gate, and your foot just sinks right through. It's not even satisfying. You just get your leg kind of stuck in the wood before you extricate it. Right.
Like either they don't understand architecture around here, something bad has happened.
It looks like they live in a neighborhood of zombies, so... I think this is a community besieged by the undead.
Yeah.
And I light a cigarette.
I get really close to you and I suck in the smoke and then blow it back in your face.
What the fuck?
I think we established 10 minutes ago that I'm schizophrenic, so this is my new thing.
I take a cigarette out of his mouth, I blow a smoke ring, and I fuck the smoke ring. But while I do it, I make eye contact with both of them and took sort of a weird warning.
Hey, Lenev, is there any danger if we call out?
No, no. In fact, I will. Uh-oh. Open up!
You there! My idea to call out!
Who are you addressing?
Hey, everybody!
Open
Just
up!
Just me out here with the idea to call out. My idea first! Calling out, bothered to get a quorum about it, was punished for it.
Yeah, it's just that I usually say that.
Well, there's a new skeleton in town, and it's under my body.
Lenev pounds on the door a bit lightly with his glowing hand.
I pound on it at the same time.
Open up!
Open up!
Open up
Open
for
up.
Lenev!
Saying it louder.
He takes two or three steps back, and slowly the gate doors start to grind open.
Open sesame.
But as the gates open, you see the top hinge of the right door, it buckles and cracks, and you see the door start to crumble and fall on to you guys towards it. It's fallen on you.
Backward somersault.
Okay. Y'all, you're... You're all taking reflex saves
back,
right now.
Backward handspring.
I start clapping.
Wait. Instead of dodging out of the way?
Sorry?
She's lost her mind.
I start clapping, but I, in my head, I'm clapping so hard that the air is going to push away the door.
While I'm doing my reflex save, backward handspring, I yell, Mulray, are you having a stroke?
No, no, I'm not. I'm saving us.
All right.
Okay, so the two of you dodge out of the way, and Mulrain as well as Lenev get hit by this door.
So you're saying that just standing there and clapping didn't work?
I guess not.
Okay.
But you're saying Lenev being a big know-it-all didn't work?
On what?
Well, he still got crushed by a door.
Yeah.
Even though he was a guy who knows when to shout and when to knock.
I guess he had better reflexes.
You're so defensive. You're so like...
So anyway, the two of you guys that I mentioned getting hurt, get hurt. You take 23 damages.
Oh.
Huge portions of wood just smash onto the floor. You're kind of pinned. You're both kind of pinned.
Jesus Christ.
All right. I start doing this. I start moving like a worm. I try to roll out of it.
Hold on. You might go into shock. Eat snow and save your urine.
I open the door, fellas. If you can pull me out.
I run back up to them and I take the wood from off of them to save them from the pile of debris.
All right, that happens. You do that. Lenev looks kind of banged up, but he pulls himself up.
You all right, buddy? You look like a skeleton.
That's normal.
All right. Well, you know, there have to be some sacrifices for us to win this fight.
I vote for Lenev. Just kidding, buddy.
What do we see before us in this doorway?
The doorway opens up, and inside you can see smaller gray huts like the one you saw, but less destroyed. I guess some of them are destroyed. You see tons of undead creatures just kind of hobbling about like zombies on a hunk of meat, but they're moving around in a frenzy.
On a hunk of meat butt?
Like a hunk of butt meat.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right.
But they start thronging about, moving their hands and their feet and all of their bodies, really. And they start erecting a large stone statue of it looks like a knight with a skeleton head, but it's about 40 feet tall. They pull it up to erection.
They just build it in front of us?
Yeah, yeah.
While we're standing there?
Yeah.
Do they do it, like, in fast motion?
No, there's a couple larger chunks. It's impressive how fast they are. Don't get me wrong. Don't let me underplay that.
I say to Lenev, is one of these guys Jerry?
No, no.
Are these guys your friends?
Yeah, these are the people. I mean, not my friends. They're just, citizens.
What do you
how
call
should
them?
We, how should we approach them?
I mean, like you would any other regular person.
Perfect. I've made these bracelets.
That's impressive. That's impressive. I'm impressed
Thank
by
you.
Those bracelets.
Thank you so much. I'll follow your lead.
I do one of those road warrior whistles. The two fingers. I can't do it in real life.
Yeah.
You know, like while they're assembling their statue, you hear off camera, and then I would hope that they would all look over and you would whip pan over to me and I would go, I don't know, something Pixar-ish, like A Little Help or Got Milk.
I mean, a whip pan?
A whip pan, like the camera.
No, I get it. I just don't know. I want to make that choice.
Oh, you don't want it to feel like...
I like the tension building of a slow pan, maybe.
Well, at any rate, I whistle to get their attention, and I say, like, we have a cursed friend here, a possessed friend, and we were hoping to get some aid.
We need the tarragon of virtue.
A couple people look over, but they go back to their stuff. He's like, yeah, they're working, they're building stuff. Also, they're just regular folk. They don't know weird stuff about tarragons or virtues.
All right,
we're gleaning all this from their behavior?
No, this is what Lenev is telling you guys as you're saying those things.
Well, I say to my friends, look, fellas, let me take care of this. I undo my hair.
All right.
I whip it around. I take out an arrow and I take the feathers from the arrow and I stuff them in my mouth, and I walk up to the zombies that have erected the statue.
Okay.
Hello.
They're not cats.
Hey guys, me and my friends are looking for a little something called the Tarragon of Virtue. And I take my finger and I rub it from the top of my forehead all the way down to my shoulder.
I do a camera take.
Those things happen. Yeah, so you say those things, and the zombie just kind of looks back at you and hisses.
All right, I go back to the group. They don't know where it is, guys.
All right, Lenev, is this some kind of healer or cleric kind of zombie in this town?
No, we don't need much healing, to be honest. We just kind of, our bodies knit themselves
health
back
brag.
Together. Yeah, I got a lot of hit points.
I think...
Don't say that. She'll try to kill you.
Oh.
I think the undead are a metaphor for Canadians.
I look around. I look around the room. Are there any doors in this room?
You're outside.
Okay. In the walls.
There's the gate you came in. There's a bunch of these dwellings, these small dwellings, but you're not really seeing anything sizable, really. But Lenev's like, you know, I brought you here to see the Bone Sages. Let's go there. Do you really want to talk to these guys?
Well, yeah. I guess not.
Definitely.
Okay.
Dodoy.
So he brings you through some places. He winds you down a path and turns left at a hut, turns right at a hut. He gets you to, it looks kind of like a church. I guess it's just a church. He brings you to a church. There's large stone steps, and he leads you up the steps. And inside, you see three tall skeletal figures. They're draped in gauzy robes that are all sorts of weird colors. And they're standing in front of a bunch of broken piles of golden bones. They're just standing in front of them. There's three of them there. They're just standing, staring at you. Lenev goes in and starts gesturing and hissing and saying all sorts of stuff. You don't really get it.
He's talking in skeleton talk?
Yeah. He's doing that for a bit.
He's singing to these guys?
Yeah, he's talking to them.
I yell out, "Are you the Bone Sages?"
They all look at you, and he stops hissing, and the three of them look at you in kind of unison. They say, "We are the three sages of Tormod Tor." Yes.
We come in search of the Tarragon of Virtue to save our friend.
Well, that's impressive.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks.
Thank you.
What are your names? Is
my name is Cork. I'm a barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Mulrane Sedana.
She's going through a lot of emotional stuff right now.
I'm Sharpie Butzalot from the Butzalot tribe. I'm a sorcerer. Level 6, if that means anything to you.
Nope. The three introduce themselves. They say, "We are the sages." The first one on the left, he goes, "I am Tor." And the second one goes, "I am Mod." And the third one goes, "I am also Tor."
Which one's the bad boy?
Probably the second Tor.
He's the one that's going to trash the hotel room, you know, when they're on tour.
Right. He's got something to prove.
Yeah. He wants out.
We need the Tarragon of Virtue. We'll pay any price within reason.
I take my finger from my forehead and my shoulder and I say, "Any price."
Wait, say that again?
Okay. Great. I'm glad I get to say that again. I take my finger from my forehead to my shoulder, and I say, "Any price."
All right, I gotcha.
What does the forehead to the shoulder thing mean?
It's a callback.
I know, but I didn't get it the first time.
What does it mean when you rape things?
It means I have a lot of issues.
Right. My thing probably means the same thing.
Just seems
in a different way.
More arbitrary. Than...
My metric for what's sexy has gotten messed up somehow. Right. Mulrane's.
Okay.
McGathy's is on point.
So the sages, they look at you saying those stuff, and then they, to answer your question that was posed, the tarragon of virtue is a rare and magical herb, and only grows in the unfiltered sunlight on the floating isle of paradise where mortals dare to tread.
I'm sure they do dare to tread there. It's called the Island of Paradise.
Where is this island?
Ever since the dawn of time, paradise has drifted high over the earth, shedding radiance and life onto the ground so that all life could flourish and grow. There it lied to this day.
It's heaven, you guys.
I mean, no. That's a different plane of existence.
Can you ferry us there?
No.
Oh, whoa. For a guy that's got nothing but information, you sure are touchy about requests for assistance.
The undead can't go into unfiltered sunlight on paradise. Are you kidding?
Man, I don't work here.
Sorry, Leviathan, is the Paradise Island, is that, is it on the same plane that we're on right now, or is it, I missed that. Did you say it was on a different plane, or it's just above us? Physically?
They look at each other for a bit, and then one of them goes, it's a floating island. It's up in the sky.
Okay, thank you.
All right, obviously we're idiots. Like, how do we get there?
We're not afraid of unfiltered sunlight, you knuckleheads. How do we get there?
I don't know.
Are there any?
You're bone sages.
Do you have a map?
No.
Do you know of anyone with a ship with air power?
No.
Do you have a really tall ladder?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Is it tall enough to reach the Isle of Paradise?
No, that would be ridiculous.
Has anybody ever been to the Isle of Paradise?
Not us. Again, we can't go there.
And that's the only place that the Tarragon of Virtue exists?
The only place that we know.
Can we leave you with a singer-songwriter who's been possessed by demons?
No! Lenev's yelling and spitting. He's all angry.
What?
He's like, what is this bullshit? You're just gonna tell him everything he wants? They tried to kill me.
Oh.
And I demand a shackling. I demand a shackling.
Oh, Lenev. I take my finger from my forehead to my shoulder, and I do it over and over again.
Wait, what the fuck is going on? What are you talking about?
What, you think I'm just going to forget you cut off my arm? You just glued paper to my head. That doesn't erase anything.
What the fuck? You led us here so that you could finish our dispute? We were finishing it in the snow.
What?
Yeah, the glued paper to your head was our consolation. Like, we were saying, we stopped a fight and said, let's be friends. So you're going to punish us for that?
No, I'm going to punish you for cutting off my arm.
We reattached it.
Yeah.
We put meat on it.
After all of that, like we were fighting you in the snow. We stopped fighting you. Then you took us here. Now you want to start fighting again?
Yeah, that was my whole plan.
Lame. You're a lame skeleton.
I wouldn't. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah? You admit it? You admit you're lame?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's lame. He said it.
Sharpie. Sharpie, offer him this, and I hand him a bracelet.
Here's a bracelet.
I don't want that.
Yeah?
I want your souls to be shackled.
How tall is Lenev?
5 feet tall.
Okay, I go up to him and I get him in a headlock and pull my great sword around his neck and say, you'll give us what we want or else I'll sever your head, fuckface.
All right.
And you know it won't end there, Lenev. It won't end there.
Yeah, that'll be the least of your trouble.
So you grab him in your headlock and do those things, and Maud goes, enough! If he demands a shackling, then we have to enact the rites of Telim Varna.
After the due process of Fumalaga.
It is... Do not insult our law. Telim Varna is the due process.
Yeah, well...
Telim Varna! They start shouting as chains fire out of the walls and into your chest.
I dodge all of them. I dodge every single one.
Into your very souls.
They shackle our souls?
They're chaining your souls. I guess that's shackling.
I swing my sword around in a flurry to defend.
Oh, too bad, dude. Souls be shackled.
I give a slow clap.
And it sounds like a thousand claps.
I take my finger from my forehead to my shoulder, and I go, I don't know what that means.
I look at all of them, and I say, "Very well, let the shackling begin. But once it's over."
Yes.
I'll be unshackled, and you'll still be ugly.
Thank you for coming, everybody. Welcome. And good night. We fucking did it. I don't know what happened, but we were all here for it. One more time for Spencer Crittenden and Aaron McGathy. I'm Jeff Davis. The mayor of Harmontown, Mr. Dan Harmon.